Welcome back to the Streak Easy Podcast, the podcast that is a spinoff of the Geek Easy Podcast, where we're going back and reliving all of the Undertaker's WrestleMania streak matches. And this, my friends, is the final episode of the show.
Or is it?
It is.
Oh, okay.
It definitely
is. Just making sure.
Suddenly, the streak has restarted. Yeah. Taker's going to go 21 more years. Oh, man. Well, I'm Pixel Dan, in case you didn't know that.
Jonathan Leonard.
And Jaron McCaffrey.
We got four matches. The four final matches that ends off our discussion about the streak, which today will be a little different because it contains three wins and a loss.
Dude, spoilers.
Oh, spoilers? Well, I think by now everybody gets it that this is a very spoilerific podcast.
Oh, okay.
Unless you've missed the last 30 years of Undertaker matches almost at this point.
Man, I think
you know what's going on. Isn't that crazy? That's crazy. All right, well, where are we starting today, Jaron?
Today we are starting with WrestleMania 27.
Aha.
At his match versus Triple H.
Second match versus Triple H.
Although they really want you to forget
that. Yeah, they're trying to pretend. They're trying to pretend like that hasn't happened before because this is hot on the heels of the two amazing matches he had with Shawn Michaels. So H decided he wanted some of that action.
Yeah.
And which is basically how this whole thing feels.
Yeah.
This one's no hold bars, and no, like this match seriously felt to me like they were like, why don't we go to the last 10 minutes of your first Michaels match, but do it for 40 minutes.
That's no joke. Yeah. That is no joke. Oh my God.
So before we jump into the match,
yeah,
I do want to bring up one of my favorite moments in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Began this feud.
Okay.
So Undertaker had been off TV, and I can't swear to this because it was a long time ago, but I would imagine since he defeated Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 26.
Probably. This was definitely around the time when he started just being an annual appearance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And I can't say for certain that this was but it was certain. But it had been a long time either way.
Right. Yeah. Between, as I was reading stuff about some of them, I don't remember if it was this one or the next one, but there was one where he had been off since like the Shield had powerbombed him in like a February June or something.
And that's what I was trying to remember. Yeah. I didn't remember if the Shield was around because what he'd usually show up for Mania, and sometimes he'd stick around for like a month and do a few random things, have a match here or there. Sometimes he'd pop up around like SummerSlam.
Yeah.
So like it's hard to remember, but he's been off TV a while at this time.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and I'm not sure if that was this one or not, but there was one of them where he was off like most of the year pretty much. Yeah.
Yep. So they advertise Undertaker returns to Raw next week.
Okay. Yeah.
And so then that week Undertaker returns and lights go out, they play the music, he comes out. And he gets in the ring with a microphone, and before he can say anything, Triple H's music hits. And Triple H had been off for a while. And Triple H does his full entrance, gets in the ring, and stares down The Undertaker, and they say nothing.
Yeah, I remember this.
And they look up, they look up at the WrestleMania sign, and Undertaker kind of half smirks. You can see it in the video package to this match.
Yeah.
You can see it in the video package. But Undertaker kind of half smirks. He starts to step away and then he turns right back and does the thumb across the throat.
Yeah.
And it's on. And then they went to commercial it was on.
That was just it.
And I mean they went on to have other cut promos and do all the other stuff. But I loved it, man. I remember it to this day. I remember watching it and just being on the edge of my seat with them saying nothing,
Yeah, that's great, man. That's
I love that video package because they use that song from the Thomas Jane Punisher movie.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That I love.
Yeah.
That's a great video package. Yeah. That's a great video package.
I always dug that's one of the like I if, that song is I like that Tom Jane Punisher movie. That song's had more lasting power than the movie. I love that song.
For sure.
And I totally forgot they had used that, so that queued up and I was like, whoa. Here it is.
Yep.
Yeah. So the entrances, I like how Triple H got his own lights out, bell gonging entrance theme. That was kind of funny.
Okay, so that's funny. But we have to point out, you watch it on the network.
Yeah.
So you probably don't remember that was actually for Who the Bell Tolls.
Yeah, I could tell. So it was like a generic version.
It was super generic. Yeah.
I could, because I was listening to it going, this is totally. Dun, 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 I was like, this dun, is totally dun, 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 dun. That song, right? That's not that song. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is really weird considering at the next WrestleMania they use a Metallica song still and it was still on the network. But whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, the one thing I'm going to say, well, that one's. It's always tough to say and tough to know who does what, who's going to pick what, you know, how on top of it their legal is when they're,
you
know, if it's a guy that's going, hey, make sure we change this, make sure we fix that, or if it's a guy that doesn't care.
Yeah, Also,
it sounded weird, you know, like it was almost when, and we'll talk about it, you know, when we get to the next match, the one they use there almost sounded like you could only hear it through the house mics.
Oh,
so yeah. It wasn't, like, piped through the
audio. Huh. I don't think I noticed that.
Yeah, but. I definitely noticed that. But I also just wanted to point out, like, how many other times do they change somebody's music and they don't make sure somebody, like, produces a generic version of the song that they use? They're just like, what's a song we own? Oh, the Tough Enough theme, just throw that on there. That'll work. This time they were like, hey, somebody make sure we get a fake version of Who the Bell Tolls or H is going to bitch at us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so he came out. This is the one where he had, like, the armor on.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he came out with the armor with the guys with the shields.
Yeah.
And he just stood there for a minute. And then when the fake For Whom the Bell Tolls song stopped and his music started, he's just standing there in his gear.
Yeah.
Like, so just, weird, man. Just magic.
And why does H... I mean, I guess it's just a thing. I feel like H is such an indie worker. And, you know, like, I mean, I'm sure he's just a wrestler and this is just a wrestler thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, he all of a sudden, I know he does, like, I don't know where he made the leap from the game, the cerebral assassin, to, like, well, I'm actually Skeletor.
Yeah, I know, right? You know, like, like, he just became the barbarian guy at some point.
Yeah, and now he's that guy.
Yeah.
I don't get it, but whatever. No,
it's like the undead zombie old West mortician just being a biker one day.
I guess. Yeah. I guess.
Also like motorcycles.
Well, and I guess that's the thing. But okay, so the difference is undoing a gimmick to like who you really are is different than. One day, I mean, Triple H is not like in real life.
How you know he did it on the castle?
I guess I don't. Oh man!
The Undertaker makes his entrance.
Yeah, man.
It's a big. It's a long walk.
Kudos to the Undertaker. I would not have the patience to do the Undertaker walk.
Yeah.
The entire length of a football field, man. Like,
dude, that's the thing. Like, watching both of these next two matches, like, the matches are long, but also the entrances are, because they're both H and Taker entrances. Yeah. So it's like, you're spending a good 20 minutes on just those two getting to the ring.
Yes.
Minimum.
Yes.
Minimum. And then we've got 40-minute matches on top of that. It's like, oh my gosh. Like, watching these matches is like, that's a lot of time dedication.
Man, you know, that's every year at Mania, though, I get that. Because we get an hour and a half in, and we've still got 2.5 hours left.
Yeah.
And there's 3 matches left.
Yeah.
And I'm just like... So all these 3 matches get 45 minutes of... This is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
But they do.
Yeah.
And it takes that because we've got to have, you know, a 5-minute, you know, a 5-minute video and 20 minutes of entrance and then a half an hour for this match. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I always get the impression the last couple of Manias that were like 2.5 hours in, and we still have 9 matches to go, and I'm just going, I'm going to be here till tomorrow.
Dude, they've got, you know what? That's a thing now.
Yeah, that is
that
a thing.
That is the thing now.
There's already like 13 or 14 matches on the card for this year's Mania. Yeah. I don't know.
It starts at 11 a.m.
I know. Yeah, like it's going to be crazy.
Well, it's insane. There's the 2-hour pre-show now, and then the 4-hour Mania, and then the last couple years they've been going like 45 minutes over that 4 hours.
Yep. It's crazy. But they just don't have those time constraints anymore. Yeah. They don't have those pay-per-view time. They can do whatever they want on the network.
And they do.
Yep.
Okay.
So let's get into the match. And there's no DQ.
Garbage.
Man,
I was sitting there halfway through this match. I was like, oh.
I was bored. I was so bored.
Because
watching
this
40-minute
match, because you're sitting there going, these guys, I mean, they're going for 40 minutes. That's pretty good. And then you watch a match and you're like, oh, they're going for like 11 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in a 40-minute sandwich.
I noticed right away that this was the era that we had the dumb Raw general manager, because that was outside of the ring. And then we had stupid
the
Michael Cole.
Well, right before this was the Michael Cole Jerry Lawler thing.
Because stupid Michael Cole's little individual caged off announcer table was sitting out there, and that was dumb. So that gave me bad flashbacks. Just some really bad stuff. Because they plowed through Michael Cole's little...
Kinda.
It totally just, like, slowly toppled over and kind of fell in on itself. Yeah, it was...
Well, and that's what one thing I was going to bring up is I think that their props failed them a little bit. Because they were building this match, and they really want to build this match like, oh my gosh, they're so intense, and it's such a brawl. How are either of them going to survive type of thing, right? So they go outside right away and start punching each other outside, and they go to their big prop, like they go to a table spot, they go to the Michael Cole thing, like almost right away, and neither of them work. Like they really were struggling to dismantle the table to set it up, Taker rips off the thing, and it kind of like falls awkward, and he has to wrestle that out of the way, and then the monitors won't come out. Like, they both spend time fidgeting with the monitors. Then when Triple H is tearing the other one off, you know, and then when they go to crush through the coal mine.
The coal mine. Oh, my God.
This big plastic square. You know, that Michael Cole used to protect himself. Wasn't he protecting himself from the chicks? Like... That was his feud was with the women, right?
Except that
Jerry Lawler stepped in at the last minute.
I remember that time. He beat King. Remember that? Oh, that was so
King got disqualified.
Whatever. I mean, that was just.
It was just great hearing, it was a JR going, Michael Cole defeats Jerry the King Lawler at WrestleMania. I can't believe I just said that.
Hey, I like your Jim Ross. Like half you and half Hank Hill.
That was kind of Hank Hillish.
I'll take it.
But so that, you know, they go to charge through, you know, and H tackles Taker into this thing, and you know they pictured it as like, I tackle you into this and it'll explode and fall apart. They ran into it and it kind of shifted.
H wobbled and
H kept pushing forward. And then as soon as H gave up and they kind of relaxed, it like fell open. And they rocked back into it, you know. Their table spot didn't go off real well. Even after fidgeting with the tables, when they hit it, it was just kind of...
Which one did they do? Because they did that backdrop.
The backdrop
which
off
was,
the table.
Oh,
which
so nasty.
Gross. Yes.
Straight from the standing on top of the table, H took a backdrop to the padded floor down there. But just the thud just, was like, ugh.
I was gonna say that was almost like one of the biggest things in the match, though. Felt like because
they went right to the very end of the match from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Within a minute, they're outside and everything they do, the other guy's down for 3 minutes so they can set up the next stuff and whatever. It's just like
they just spent so much time with Taker just selling on the ground and H telling him to stay down. And like literally it was like there were so many moments where it's like, what are you guys even doing right now? There is just nothing happening. There is nothing happening. This is not exciting. The crowd's dead quiet.
Was dead quiet. Like, the announcers. The other thing I was going to point out was there was a lot of dead air.
Yeah.
Because the announcers, and I don't know if it, you know, King was trying
to. He's still there.
Yeah.
He's over by the table, and he's still by the table. Now he's walking around for a while.
Yeah. Well, he also had King, because King had just finished his match, which who made the call for King to have his match and then go back to announcing? You know, I don't know who thought that was a good idea.
Well, his match was with Michael Cole.
Michael Cole didn't have to go back to announcing.
I mean, yeah, Michael Cole didn't go back, and the King is 60 here? I mean, late, mid-50s at least, right? Like,
I don't know.
You know, like, this is an old... I don't want to call him like an old man, but you know, this isn't.
I shouldn't throw stones. I get winded tying my shoes. So
I'm not throwing stones at him. I'm blaming whoever thought, you know, King's going to have this match and then he's going to call the rest of Mania.
Yeah.
Like, you're just not, you know.
In fairness, though, it was probably King who made that call.
People don't always make the best call for themselves.
No.
And so it's up to somebody who's producing a multi-million dollar event show to make sure to make the right decision for their show.
Okay. Well, all we know for sure is it wasn't Pritchard's fault.
It wasn't Pritchard's fault. Okay.
I don't think he's there then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so yeah, you're right. Okay, all right. But yeah.
That's really all that happens here, right? Like H just like we get to a point where that's all that's happening. Mm-hmm. H is beating him with a chair, he's just telling him to stay down. He's just like, I don't know, he's trying to murder The Undertaker, and The Undertaker just keeps kind of getting back up. But like the whole story of this match is that like H
is murdering The Undertaker.
H is murdering The Undertaker, right. And The Undertaker is like struggling to get back up to his feet, but keeps standing. He's like Captain American-ing it the whole time, right? He just keeps getting back up.
He could do this. I could do this all day.
Which eventually, like, he gets the sledgehammer. You know, sledgehammer stuff after beating down Taker for a little bit, and then that's when we get the ridiculous Hell's Gate stuff at the end.
Oh man.
Which is the go home, because then like he traps H in the Hell's Gate and H struggles for a little bit and then taps out, and then the end, match over. And again, like, I just don't like the Hell's Gate for...
It looks terrible.
Well, I don't like it as a move, but I super don't like it as a finish to a match, because it feels anticlimactic, especially for a guy like The Undertaker. And I just, I don't know, like, that's not what people are expecting to see for the end of an Undertaker match and stuff, you know? Like, I hated it when he ended the Edge match with it, and it just felt the same way here. This whole thing just felt like H just had the... Probably both of them. I don't know why I like to blame H for this stuff sometimes. But, like, they had this big dramatic story in their heads of this, and it just didn't play out the way that they wanted it to, but they stuck to their guns and they did it anyway. You know what I mean?
And I think that's the thing. That's even what I have in my notes is that, you know, it's like they lost track of the story because they were trying to sell how brutal it was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it was. Because then they did the whole thing after the match where Taker couldn't get up on his feet and he had to be stretchered out of the arena.
Yep.
And I just, I don't know, man. Like, it's super weird that we've had, like, this whole buildup of the streak about how dominant The Undertaker is.
Right.
And in one match, we get all of a sudden this story where Triple H is the guy who totally incapacitates The Undertaker to the fact that, like, I don't get it.
Well,
I don't like it. The story wasn't told good enough for me to, like, care about it. The whole thing just didn't click, man.
Well, I think they were trying to go too epic. And again, I'll do the same thing. The same thing. I'll just blame H.
Yeah.
You know, but I think H watched those Michaels matches and was like, oh, we can do that too. We can keep this going. We can have one of these every year, and I can be the guy who stepped into that role. But they just tried to do, like, they just took the wrong lessons from what had come before, you know?
Yep. So, the one thing I'll present... Not in defense, but maybe in explanation a little bit. And I don't know this, but this is my assumption. This is kind of the era where we see not year long storylines, but Mania to Mania storylines.
Yeah.
This was this the year that The Rock was there?
The next year was, right?
Is it the next year?
The next 30, 2 years.
The next 2 years.
Never
Yep. So the next
Because he hosted or something like that.
Yeah, he hosted this year. Yeah, that's right. He hosted. He hosted this year, which was a clear setup for
him and Cena.
Once in a Lifetime, which then led to Second in a Lifetime. So this was very much the time where they were like, well, we can just do Mania to Mania storylines. And I think they had that when they booked this. Because if you remember, like they did this match this way, and we can go ahead and segue into the next year, because the next year was when they did the storyline where Taker came back and was like, I want Triple H again. And Triple H was like, nah, I don't need to do that. Yeah. And so then The Undertaker started cutting his hair a little bit every day until Triple H accepted the match, right?
That's just the weirdest. Like, it feels like just the most shoehorned, like we better explain why Undertaker decided to get a haircut. What? Yeah. What? Okay. Yeah.
So let's say, go back for a second, because I don't remember that.
You don't remember that?
No.
That was 100% the storyline.
He was just cutting his hair?
Yes.
So that was,
why did anyone care?
I don't know. They even said it in the commentary for the Hell in a Cell match, because they're like,
I caught him say so, but like, I didn't know what it meant.
Like, he kept cutting his hair until Triple H accepted this match. I'm like, well, that's not a thing. That's
nobody, wait, that wasn't.
What? Oh no! That, stop him!
That wasn't a euphemism.
Please accept the match.
That was legitimately the storyline.
So weird.
It's like a hunger strike, bro.
No, yeah. So, yeah, yes, it's exactly like
I don't know why those work either.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm not going to eat until you give me what I want. That sounds like two birds with one stone.
I don't know. Let's just get into the Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, so
we're there. So. Yep.
I mean, so that's where we are. So this is the follow-up, and I think they really were intent on, like, we'll do this year. I'll beat you until you can't stand up, but you can still choke me out.
Yeah.
And then next year we'll come back and you want the match, but I won't give it to you at first.
Yeah.
Right?
That's totally what it is.
Yeah, so H is super excited about his storyline. We'll just continue blaming. Okay, let's talk about that for a hot second. Because so H has amassed this reputation, and there's this narrative that Triple H is just this self-indulgent egomaniac that, you know, gets to do whatever he wants because he's married to the boss's daughter,
right?
And because his position. I don't necessarily believe that,
right?
But everything that happens in the narrative, whether you look at it, like once you look at it through that lens, you can't unsee it that way. Because everything that happens in the narrative just fits so perfectly that way.
Well, it's one of those instances, I think, where like two things can be true at once.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the one hand, he's not where he is. He can't do everything he wants. He didn't get his position handed to him because he married the boss's daughter.
Right.
He's busted it his entire career. He was the guy who would always, you know, he's the guy who asked for extra responsibility.
Yep.
Would show up at creative meetings and then still fly to the house show that night. Would do all that stuff. He's still working nonstop.
You hear guys like Steve Austin and The Big Show who ask each other, let me ask you this. If Triple H doesn't marry Stephanie, where do you think he is? And they both say, well, you know, I still think he'd be where he's at.
Yeah, absolutely.
Regardless.
Absolutely. However, he also gets to do a lot of stuff that he wants to do.
Yeah.
And that's part of it as well. And so it's like, you know, it's not one or the other, you know, but there's factors of both. So.
For sure. All right, so we're at the Hell in the Cell.
Yeah.
At WrestleMania 28. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes, 28. Mm-hmm. There's no video package. I noticed, which seems super weird to me. And I didn't look. I bet they played the video package earlier in the night. Sometimes they do that.
They do that sometimes.
Sometimes they'll play a video package and then like there'll be two matches. You know.
Yeah.
Before we get to that match. So that may have happened. I didn't go back and look because I don't have.
Yeah, time. I didn't search either, but I always skipped back a little bit and I was like, oh, nothing.
Okay. Yeah.
So. Weird.
Triple H's entrance was super dumb.
He just had like
that big shoulder hem.
I was going to say, it's like an enlarged version of the outfit he wore last year that he just walked through.
Right.
Like, what even was that?
I don't know, man. There'll be a big me, and I'll be shooting steam and smoke, and fireworks will come out of my head, and then I'll walk out of my mouth.
Yeah.
You gotta try new things.
All right, pal.
Sounds good,
you,
pal.
If you want it.
Oh, my God.
So then,
who's gonna build that thing? I already got it in my garage.
I keep one on hand just in case.
I knew this day would come
immediately after last year when I wore it.
I walk out through it to my car every day.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Living next to Triple H must be the best.
Just picture the garage opening. Like his kids push that thing out. Yeah.
It's time to play the game.
Steph stands out there with her cell phone.
Yeah. Oh, playing the music?
Yeah, playing the music.
He's got to spit the water before he gets in his car, dude.
Neighbors have company going, what's going on across the street? We think Hunter just needs bread again or something.
Yeah. Every time he goes out.
Yep.
Oh, man. Oh, all right.
He's usually gone less time than it takes for him to leave.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So here we get, this is where we kind of talked about using the Metallica music here for the entrance for the cell.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really dumb.
Yeah, it was weird. So, like, Undertaker got to the ring. Well, it's also worth mentioning he's wearing the robe now instead of the coat and the hat.
Yep.
And they do the big reveal, right? Like, he gets in the ring and he stands in front of H and he flips the hood back and you hear lightning strikes and there's thunder and oh my God, he's got a mohawk now. Like, what? Why is this a thing? Like,
he cut his hair. Yeah. That's how long it took Triple H to agree to the match.
Which by the way, I understand your hair now, Dan.
Yep.
I get it. It's my take. I didn't get it until I watched this match.
It's my Taker. Oh, okay.
Yep. I dig this look for Taker.
Yeah, it's an alright look.
I mean, I like long hair Taker, but let's be honest, he was getting a little old and it's not looking as good. Like I kind of wish he wouldn't have grown it back, like, because now I don't think he looks very good at all.
Yeah, he looks a lot less like Viggo the Carpathian with the mohawk.
Oh wow! He does have those really high widow's peaks.
Man. Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. That's what I was always.
He is Undertaker.
He's the Undertaker. No, please go.
Yeah, that cell cat, the Metallica music. I was just like, why? We always
It's also that stupid high cell. I hate that cell,
man.
Oh, and
it's a really tall cell.
Yeah, the tall cell. Yeah. I mean, it's the one they use all the time now.
Yeah.
And I assume it's aesthetically better for filming, whatever. I have no idea.
Discourages them from climbing to the top.
Yeah, make sure nobody jumps off it. But yeah, I don't. It's almost because it's like one. It's almost so tall. It feels pointless to have a top on it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why do we have that top on it? Nobody's gonna escape or get up there.
H was probably scared that if Taker could get to the top, he'd hang a noose up there.
Oh, that's probably.
Think about it.
Last time we had a Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
This match is way better.
It was.
I think.
Although it started slow and it felt the same for a long time.
Yeah.
I feel like,
man, you know, I don't disagree, but there was a lot more going on. You know, a lot of the early part of this match was Taker just beating up Triple H.
Yeah, yeah, we did get a lot of that in the beginning, which was cool.
Yeah.
We also have to mention that Shawn Michaels is a special ref time, which plays into this quite a bit.
Yeah, and it helps the story out a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it almost gives somebody, almost like an audience surrogate to react to how brutal everything is.
Dude, Michaels, you know? The way he sells through the whole match, just like selling the things that's happening, he makes things feel more important than they are. It's amazing.
Listen, I think I liked the story of this match more than the match itself, which is not, like, I mean, it's definitely way better.
Yes. But, well, it's basically the same story, but
told better.
They're telling it better. Yeah. Telling it better.
Yeah, well,
you're right. Shawn helps a lot.
Yeah.
Shawn helps a lot.
Yep. And they even get to, you know, because a lot of the 27 match was Triple H going, stay down.
Yeah.
Stay down, Undertaker.
Both of them, they made sure to get a lot of, like, real close camera shots so you could see them yelling at each other and stuff like that and all that stuff, too. So, which it just felt a little weird.
I was going to say, there's a lot of that kind of talking going on because, like, that one point, he tells Shawn to tell Taker,
end it or I will.
And like he goes over to talk to Taker, and he's like, should I call it? Should I call it? He's like, don't call it. Like, yep. Taker's like yelling at him as he's getting up.
Yeah, and they're right in their face there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is kind of cool. It's like you actually get to, they have dialogue. Yeah. They have lines. Yeah.
A lot of them were the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is really an example, and you don't see this, you don't see it a ton where it's pulled off to such a epic scale. This is like a TV show.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of times where, you know, wrestling, like you just have the match and they just shoot the match, right? Whatever the spots there are, you know, they shoot the spots. There's a very like outside viewer dynamic.
Yeah.
And this, like you say, you know, there's a lot of camera shots. There's a lot of close shots. There's dialogue and a lot of facials used here. You know, it felt like you were watching an episode of something. There's a lot more. It was more than just shooting the match. It was like, you know, they were playing to the camera and the camera knew where to get and where to be when, you know, like it was all orchestrated very well.
Yeah.
And made it feel bigger and better than it was. I really liked the use of the Hell's Gate here.
When he got Sean
yeah, to keep Sean from calling it.
Yeah, yeah.
Sean's like, I'm going to call it. And he's like, oh, come here. Hell's Gate.
Oh, no. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And I was actually, I felt like that, I haven't watched this match since it originally happened. So yeah. I remembered that like that involvement happened. I didn't realize there was still so much of a match after all that stuff happens. Yep. Because he does that. He puts Sean in the Hell's Gate for a while, and then we get that back and forth with H while Sean's kind of out and selling it for a while.
Yep.
And then out of nowhere, we get that spot because he, was it Taker goes for...
Taker went for the tombstone.
Went for the tombstone.
No, last ride. It was last the last ride.
He went for the last ride.
Taker went for the last ride.
H got out of it. Yeah. Out of nowhere, Sean hits him.
Which I was sure was going to blow his quad.
So out of nowhere, Sean just pops back up and super kicks Taker.
Right.
And Taker turns right into that pedigree.
Yep. Yep.
And this was one of those moments where I remember watching it where I was like, oh no. Like, because that felt like that could have been the end of a match, yep. Right? And so that was a great falsie.
It was a great.
That really brought the crowd alive to that moment right there.
It was Michael selling that whole thing.
Oh,
right,
man. There. Yeah, because Michael's was even
when he kicked out, Michael's like reacted. You know?
Yeah. Oh, that was good stuff.
Yeah, it was a great spot. It was great. It was what a spot needs to be.
Yeah.
And it was used so well because you're right. There was a lot of match left. But like from that moment on, the crowd was bought in for everything.
It changed the trajectory of the match.
Right.
Like from that moment on, it was suddenly the ups and downs of, oh my God, is Taker actually going to lose? Oh, thank God, he's not losing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of went on that for the rest of the match.
Yep.
Which was awesome.
Yeah. So then they did some more work. They get to, I really loved, there was the spot where Taker's grabbing the chair and H is crawling for his sledgehammer.
Yeah.
And when he gets to the sledgehammer, Taker's already there and just steps on it.
Yeah, steps on it.
And it can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Which kind of leads us towards the go home.
What about that spot? Because he did that spot, like, so H beat Taker to death with a chair for a really long time.
Yeah.
Which was just bonkers. And then once he decided that wasn't enough, that's when he brought the sledgehammer in.
Right.
Dude, he did that spot where, like, he laid Undertaker down and he was ready to, like, just drive the sledgehammer. Yeah. And, like, at the last minute, Sean just grabbed it. Oh, my God. That was amazing. But, like, the thing that really got me about that is, like, right before he did it and Sean yanked it out of his hand, the entire arena booed.
Yeah.
Like, they wanted to see Taker's head get smashed in for real. I was like, what? Bloodthirsty on us, man. They wanted to see
him. They straight up wanted to see Taker get Gallagher'd.
Yeah. That was a good spot. Like, the timing was just perfect on it. Like, Sean was there exactly when he needed to be there to make it not look like one of those, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. Because it was right as soon as H drew back, Sean was like, no!
Yeah.
I loved it. It was a good spot.
Well, man, that's great. Great for us as workers to see stuff like that as wrestlers.
Yeah.
Because we know what it's like. Because it's professionals who just trust.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you can trust the other guy to be there. Because... Yeah. Triple H didn't give Shawn Michaels a signal. He didn't look for Shawn Michaels to make sure he was in position.
Yeah.
You know, and we've been the guy in the ring with a spot where we're waiting You know, we go for that drawback and we have to wait.
Yeah, for the other guy. Where's the guy at? He was
supposed to be here. Or we don't trust the guy we're in there with, so we're like checking, looking back. And, you know, in the course of a match, it doesn't matter sometimes, or, you know, you're good enough to, I mean, the audience doesn't know what you're looking for, so it doesn't necessarily look off to them.
Right.
But man, when you see a couple of guys in there that are just like, I'm going to smash his head if he doesn't catch me.
Yeah, I know. That's what I feel like. Right. Like, if Sean wasn't there, would Taker's just been dead? Yeah. H is like, I gotta make this look good. Yeah. All right.
Once Taker gets everything turned around, I really love just at the end of this match, you know, the last stretch, just how frustrated Triple H looks.
Yeah.
You know, like, because they tell the story like, You cross the line in that match where H is still trying to fight, but he knows he can't win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can see that so clearly. You know, it's just that great storytelling, great camera work. You know, what makes this match special is how they put it all together, because there is a stretch of this match, 2-3 minutes, where H just knows.
Yeah,
H, and he's just so, you know, and he's frustrated. You know, and you can just see it so well. I just loved watching him just, like, you know, every time Taker was there to catch him or stop him or hit him.
Yeah.
And he was just like, ugh, 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 you know, until finally he's just like, he does the crotch chops.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then gets tombstoned.
Yeah, well, I love that too, because like he's crawling up on Taker, and he's basically like, you're just going to have to finish it, you know?
Yep.
And like, I love it, because Taker grabs him by the head and like looks at him stare right in his face and does the throat slit before picking him up. I was like, what a great, like, iconic, like, shot right there. That's so cool.
Well,
that's
awesome. It was so much better. Well, that whole segment there, because first he crawls up in the corner, and he looks at Taker, and he's just like, ugh. And he looks at Sean, and he's like, I can't. I know.
Yeah.
I can't. You know, and then he looks back at Taker, does the crotch chops, and that's when I think he comes out with like a punch, and Taker just drops him.
Yeah.
And then they're doing the crawl up. But it's also fun to look back, because when Sean did the crawl up, and Taker hesitated, and Sean did the throat slash and slapped him, and this time Taker's just like, nope, sucker, you're done.
You're dead. You're dead.
I won't hesitate with you.
Good tombstone for the finish. 1-2-3.
Yep, good solid tombstone.
Much better match this time around. I totally agree.
Didn't we talk at the time? Like, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure that was the plan from the get-go. But I feel like we were talking at the time, like, when that match came around, we were like, is this just, like, are they making up for that last one? Like, did they do that last one, and then they both went back and went, nope, we can do way better than that.
I mean, it feels that way, you know?
Vince was like, okay, pal, bring Sean in then.
Yeah.
He's going to be the ref.
We got to save it. Yeah.
Do you think it burns Triple H that the only way he can have a Michaels-esque match with Taker is if Michaels is in there?
Oh, no.
Probably a little bit.
Yeah.
So then they do the Friends Forever ending, and they end the era.
We're the three best friends.
Which
they talked about this being, yes, they talked nonstop about this being the end of an era.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy, I don't get it either.
I mean,
like the WrestleMania 28 era?
You know, well,
it's over now.
I guess, man.
Except for these other matches.
I think it was just a thing to say, because even at the time, H was back the next year, Taker was back the next year, you know?
Exactly.
Like, But,
Well, I mean, again, though, like, what, like when they did the final Michaels match, there was that. I mean, that's the biggest selling point they've had for any of the streak matches.
Right.
It's like, something is ending tonight, for sure. Something is, and it did put a big error between coming off of the first match and having that stipulation. It put a big error around it,
right?
And so I think they wanted to try to recreate that in some way, shape, or form, but they didn't have anything. So they're like, "We'll just use the words."
Yeah,
I guess.
Just use the words
for sure.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, WrestleMania 29.
CM Punk.
Yeah.
This is
how happy do you think Living Color was to get called for Mania?
Yeah,
hey, this is Taker Heyman 1, right?
Yes.
This is Taker Heyman 1, yeah. Yeah, that was really cool seeing the live play in for CM Punk. I love how hyped up Punk is at the intro to this.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell he's just real amped for this whole thing. Like, he's standing in the ring, and when Taker's gong hits, and he just goes, yeah! Yeah. Like, I felt like that's what I would be like if I was standing in the ring getting ready to wrestle The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Yep. Yep. Like, that was just real cool to see. Like, he was hyped.
Yeah.
The Punk's so good. And I didn't want to like Punk ever. I really didn't. But, man.
He's good.
Yeah. And he is. He's just fun to watch.
Yeah.
You know, because he's so good, everything.
Man.
Yeah.
He's real good. And this match was really a lot of fun, too. Well, Taker's entrance, this was the one with the zombie hands, right?
Yeah, which was awesome.
I love it. Yeah. I love it so much. It's so cool. It just looks great.
I was waiting for that. Like I kept everyone we've watched, I was like, is this the one? Is this the one?
Yeah.
Is this the one? Because that's so different from what he usually does. You know, like, I mean, it's totally a Taker thing.
Right.
But, you know, it just feels different.
It's the souls of all his past WrestleMania
victims. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah,
I loved it.
It looked cool. It was a good effect.
Was the only match of the four where Old School gets hit, right?
Does it get hit?
Yeah.
Punk hits it.
Punk hits it.
Yeah.
He hits it once. He goes for it a second time and gets racked on the ropes.
Yep.
But I just every time that would happen, the entire series of matches we were watching, it was just like, oh, here he goes, and then he just gets flipped off, which I think Punk
Taker
gets it reversed, and then Punk does it later.
I have a feeling that's probably because Taker stopped wanting to jump onto his knees like that. You know, big old guy like that, like, oh, I'll fall on my back, fine, but I don't want to jump onto my, I don't want to drop straight down on my knees anymore.
I mean, it was such a great thing to do, and it was such a heel move to do for Punk because of exactly that. Like, people keep clamoring for it, and then it keeps getting reversed, and so Punk's like, I'll just do it.
Yep.
Yeah. I really noticed, too, because this was the era when Punk was super hot, too.
Yep.
He's so hot right now.
He was getting a lot of cheers in this match. Yeah. There was a moment early on where they were doing the altering chants, like Undertaker, CM Punk, but the CM Punk part was so much louder than the Undertaker part. And then I thought it was really funny because this is going on and JBL goes, 80,000 people are cheering for the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Good job, JBL.
Yeah, sure there, JBL.
Thanks for telling us how it is. Yep. Mm-hmm.
This is...
Maybe there were 200,000 people there.
Okay, I guess so. Yeah. A small section of them were cheering for the Undertaker. Yeah, Punk had pretty loud chance of the whole thing, actually.
This is really the only match of the streak that is really split like this.
Yeah.
You know, they do the... Nobody wanted Batista to win.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted Edge to win.
Yeah.
You could make an argument for the Shawn Michaels matches.
Yeah.
But they were not split like this.
Yeah.
You know, Shawn Michaels had fans, yes, and he had some fan support, but this was the only match of the streak where it really felt like, man...
I think the second Michaels match, there was so much at stake, which I think everybody knew why that was happening, so you didn't get quite the same feel, but there was way more hesitancy about... Because it's like, every time Michaels would get close to winning, people would freak out like they normally do. Except when Undertaker would get close to winning, they would also freak out a little.
Yeah.
And that part was new. Yeah. But as far as just the cheering and stuff goes, I think you're dead on there. This is the only time. And I think that's, you know, maybe I'm putting too much smart mark into the thought process there. But at some point, the streak was going to end.
Yeah.
And from a fan perspective, especially around that time, I don't think there's anybody people would have been happier with than Punk.
I was going to say, I feel like people would have been totally cool if Punk was the guy.
Yeah.
So
I think there's a couple things that go into that. I think the Punk fans would have been totally cool with him ending it.
Yeah.
There's also a little bit, I don't think anybody thought for a second that Punk was going to, you know, going into that match, I don't think for a second anybody thought that Punk was going to beat it.
Be the guy, yeah.
So you kind of cheer for something you know is not going to happen. You know what I mean? Sometimes you're like, man, it'd be, I know this isn't going to happen, so it'd be cool if it did.
You know,
and you kind of cheer for that.
And that is one of those wrestling things, like, you never know for sure, but this was, you know, coming off of four matches with Michaels and then H, and it's WrestleMania 29.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, so, it would have been a weird time to end it.
Yeah.
Like, for H to fail twice, and then Punk to come in and do it one WrestleMania before a giant anniversary would have been very bizarre.
Yeah. So the other thing to consider is that not a lot of Undertaker opponents were like at their peak. And this was like, Punk was pretty peaked out here.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You know, a lot of the guys were either, when he worked them at Mania, were either up and coming or past their prime. Yeah. You know, at least career wise. I mean, you know, Shawn Michaels delivered what Shawn Michaels delivered.
Past their prime means something different for a guy like Michaels,
right?
Even a Flair or somebody like that. You know,
Edge and Batista were probably at their prime. Probably. But other than that, I mean, really...
Snuka was
right in that sweet spot.
Yeah, right in that sweet spot.
Right there.
Yep. So, this match. I liked this match. Couple things. Punk wearing the purple and gray.
I noticed that. Colors. He was wearing Undertaker's colors. He did that a lot. He always wore kind of like throwback stuff to other wrestlers on his gear, which is really cool. But I noticed that right away. I was like, oh, he's wearing like black and purple and gray. That's awesome.
Did you notice? So do you remember when Taker was out there, when Bearer was out there with Taker? And he would do the thing, and they even called it out several times. I remember us talking about it. You know, when the Undertaker's doing well, he holds that he holds the urn up and you know, shows the urn to everybody. And then when Undertaker's in trouble, he holds it close to his heart.
Yeah.
Did you notice Paul Heyman was doing that with the urn while for Punk?
I didn't notice he was doing it to that extent.
The entire time.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
I loved how they worked Paul Bearer into that.
Yeah.
You know.
I do too.
Yeah.
I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
And I love the whole urn thing. Everything about that was great.
Yeah. It's one of those weird, again, it's weird lines you can draw in wrestling, because that easily could have come off as disrespectful, except no. Not in this case at all, you know.
Yeah, like, and that's the way I feel too. And I know it still kind of gets that sometimes. Some people do think that that's kind of disrespectful still, but this to me feels like one of those things that what was Paul Bearer's actual name?
William Moody.
I feel like he would have totally approved of something.
Exactly.
Like this, right? You know what I mean? Like, as a wrestler...
I don't think there's anything that would have made him happier than to be a part of one more Undertaker match.
Exactly. Right. And I feel like it was done perfectly. You know, the urn is tied to Taker all these years, and the passing of Paul Bearer is kind of fresh on everybody's mind. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was awesome.
It was good.
Yeah.
I didn't have a problem with it.
Nope.
They did the one table spot, and the table just didn't break.
With that big old macho elbow to the outside.
CM Punk jumps from the top of the ring to the table on the outside, drops the elbow on Taker, and that table didn't
flex,
bounce, move.
It was just stiff as can be, man.
Yep.
Taker kind of fell off the side of it afterwards, and Punk laid there in pain.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that sucks.
He immediately regretted that decision.
It could have been worse, because, like, we've seen guys, like, I think Michaels, like, when he hits, like, the corner of the table.
Yeah.
At least Punk looked like he landed pretty much flat on top of it.
He looked like his side caught a lot of the side of the table.
Well, but that one, it also tore up his knee.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the one he...
Because he was selling his knee for the rest of the match.
Yeah, that's the one. I don't think he had surgery, but he needed it. I mean, who knows? You know, it's one of the things he talks about. Like, oh, I tore my knee in that. They wouldn't give me time off.
Oh,
like, if you listen to his podcast and stuff.
Okay, gotcha.
But, the sit-up with the Anaconda Vice was great. There were some great spots in this match.
Like, those moments, right?
Yeah.
Like, these are the kinds of things you see in Undertaker flashbacks.
Right.
Yeah, the sit-up out of that Vice and the look on Punk's face is amazing. Oh, my gosh. The way he sold that, so good.
The last, he hit him with the urn out of the last ride. That was a great spot.
That's just like the H Sledgehammer spot, but it's so good.
Yeah.
Like, I love
it. Well, and what was great about this one was... they had Heyman rush up on the side of the ring just in time to throw him the urn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, they had to coordinate that, which was a great spot, rather than when they did it with H, he just kind of snuck it up off the ground.
Yeah, but carried it up with himself. Yeah, totally.
So this match, you know, we talked about the crowd being split for this match. This match started really hot, which we hadn't seen. You know, both the crowd never came up for the first Triple H match.
Right, right.
And the crowd didn't get into it until the end, until this, you know, in the second one. You know, about halfway, they really got into it. The crowd was hot this whole time. And we talked about, I said, I don't think anybody thought for a second that CM Punk was going to end the streak. But through the course of this match, I feel like the crowd started to believe it was possible.
To believe it was possible.
You know, and that's a testament to the work of those guys. Yeah. You know, like, they really, they put in the work. They really did the match. And, you know, just talk, it shows what a match can be. You know, you can draw the fans in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though we all know it's fake, even though we all, you know, maybe it's, you know, a foregone conclusion who's going to win. You know, sometimes you get that guy that's just that much bigger of a star.
Right.
But if the match has worked well and the performers perform, you can forget through the course of that match and you can buy in at the end, even if it gives you the outcome you expect. Yeah, you know?
Totally.
And I think that happened with this match. I think they worked so well and they performed so well that by the end of the match, the crowd wasn't sure what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And you don't always have to do something shocking to get your point across, you know?
Right.
So. They did that crazy spot where he got Taker up and actually hit him with the GTS.
Yeah.
And Taker just bounced right off the ropes and just pick-punked straight up into like a crazy fast tombstone. Yeah. Oh, that was nuts.
Yep. He was like still walking as he...
as he was selling. And it was just like, well, I'm going to hit you with a tombstone while I'm selling. It was nuts. Yeah, it was such a crazy spot. But it was awesome. It worked good.
Yeah.
And it got one of those really close call moments, too, where everybody was like, oh, what the crap? Like it was a good spot. I liked it. And then we got the big tombstone finally at the end.
Big tombstone at the end.
1, 2, 3.
I loved that, too, because Taker went real far out of his way to bounce around and line that up for the hard cam, and they never even switched to it.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, like they showed the whole thing from the side ring cam there.
Oh,
but you could see him like stumbling and moving around and making sure he was lined up just from the ring cam.
Yeah. It was a good match, though. I was real into that one. It was
I think it was in a way ending the streak on a real high note.
Yeah. it was kind of a sleeper.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
For sure.
Very cool. All right, well, that brings us to the final match we're going to discuss.
WrestleMania 30.
Against Brock Lesnar.
30 years of Mania.
30 years of Mania.
22 years of Taker.
That's crazy.
Brings us 22 years of Taker at Mania.
Yeah.
22 years of Taker at Mania.
He missed some.
Yep.
So 22 he wins. Missed. Or 21 wins.
21 wins.
And then we're going to get our first loss. This is the match that ends the streak. So do you feel like there was a bit of foreshadow, like watching this back now, it feels like they foreshadowed it pretty heavy, but I don't know if that's just us going back now that we've seen it, right?
I think it's just that hindsight lens.
Yeah. Like for Taker's entrance, they did that cool thing where like they had caskets out at ringside for every one of his wins, which I thought was neat. But like that whole thing where it was kind of like playing highlights from all his WrestleMania career and everything, that felt very like,
yeah,
like a cap to the streak. You know what I mean?
It did.
Yeah.
And it was.
Yeah.
But I specifically remember not thinking that at the time.
No, me either. So, look, I didn't think there was any chance that Brock Lesnar was going to win this match. Like, I felt more like Punk and Triple H the year before had a better chance than Brock Lesnar did. This was totally out of nowhere, and I think everybody felt that way by judging just by the reaction of the crowd that night.
Yes. Was the crowd real quiet, or was my volume just at like?
The crowd was super quiet.
They were super quiet.
I couldn't tell if they were just out of it, or
so this
or
match
if
was hot steaming garbage.
It was terrible.
It's not good.
For sure. And it's funny too. As effective as Lesnar can be, and as much as they do put on him as like a spectacle, he seems to have a lot of those big money matches that no one cares about in the crowd. And a lot might be the wrong term, but multiple. Like, I can count more for him than I can for anybody else.
Man, so Lesnar, the Lesnar we have now is really a product of seeing what Vince can do when he doesn't, what can happen when Vince doesn't give up on an idea. Because he was not delivering at this point. Yeah. And that was part of the reason why we didn't think that there was a chance he was going to beat the streak. Because he had come back to big fanfare and totally crapped the bed with John Cena in his first match back. Then he came back and had that awful storyline with Triple H where like he broke Triple H's arm, and then they had two really bad matches and one kind of okay match. It just was not like he was not that's delivering at this point.
Man.
And
well,
so
they
now,
talked about him breaking Triple H's arm in this match.
Yep.
Yeah, the Cena ones were bad.
And so then we build up to this match, and it is not any better. And I don't know.
Steaming pile is an apt description for it.
And I wonder a little bit if Taker hadn't gotten spoiled, you know, because for a long time his thing was like, take the guys that you can't get anything out of and get a little something out of them.
Right.
Like that was his, that was the beginning of the streak was, you know, 7-8 years.
Well, but now, I mean, he's had 10 years in a row.
Exactly. Yeah.
With, yeah. Excellent opponents. Yeah.
You know, so I don't know if he got a little spoiled and then just there was nothing there. I also feel it's important to note he had a really good feud with Lesnar when Lesnar, before Lesnar left.
Yeah.
Like Lesnar came in and beat The Rock and beat some other guys and was on his hot streak. And I think is, I want to say 2002.
Okay.
Tough to be sure off the top of my head, but I think it was 2002. And like they had a Hell in the Cell that was really good. They had a match that ended in like a DQ that I loved. I was a huge fan of that match. When he was the American Badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like they had good matches and then they got here and just, this match was garbage.
It's so boring. And slow. It's slow. And I remember,
Taker looked so weird. He was bright red, and he had that beard thing. And it's like at the very beginning of that match, he's just like hopping around like not Taker. You know? And I don't know.
I remember reading or hearing or something afterwards that he got knocked out at some point early in this match and doesn't actually remember the match.
Yeah.
I was looking for it while I was watching and could not find any moment where he got knocked, you know?
I don't believe that.
Yeah. Because that's been, like, the narrative ever since. I couldn't find a moment where, like, that could have possibly happened.
It didn't. I think that's their excuse. That's them trying to
give a reason why it's so bad.
Yeah, explain why that was so bad. Because remember, the story is that The Undertaker came back from that match and collapsed in the entrance way.
Yeah.
And Vince left WrestleMania to go to the hospital with The Undertaker.
Yes.
That's the story. And I'm calling BS.
Yeah.
I watched.
Hey, you remember, Brock, you remember when you almost killed yourself in that match with Kurt Angle and he had to pick you up and beat himself with you? Maybe we can pretend that happened, except at the beginning and we just couldn't do it.
There's one German suplex.
Yeah.
That looks a little ugly.
Yeah.
And Taker kind of goes flat for a second afterwards.
Yeah.
But that's almost at the end of the match.
Right.
And by the time he's selling up, they shoot his face, you can see he's clear eyed.
Yeah. Right, right.
You know, I know
he didn't ever look glassy-eyed or dazed or anything to me throughout this whole match.
Yeah, there was,
other than his normal selling of like, you know, his I gotta get back up. That's like his sell that he kind of started doing within these past few years.
Yep. Yeah,
there was none of that. Maybe you know, this is where he realized he was past his prime a little bit.
Mm.
You know, and he wanted his half hour or whatever and got out there, and at the 10-minute mark was like, whoa, man. I should not have asked for a half hour, you know. Who knows? You know, I don't befault anybody for having a bad match, a bad night, a bad whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
But this was like worst case scenario to end the streak on.
Totally. That's why I remember just being so upset about it too. Like, I went through some crazy emotions with this because,
bro, I remember we were sitting in my apartment watching this happen.
Yep.
And I remember Lesnar scooped him up for that third F5, and I looked at you and I said, "That's it, it's over." And you went, "What? What do you mean? What?" And he dropped him with that F5, and I said, "That's three." And you were like, "Yeah, nah. I can't believe he's going to kick out of three F5s," and they counted the three, and you were that black guy they always show.
Yeah.
You were that black guy.
Yeah, I know. Yep, I was speechless.
And then you were mad.
I was mad.
Like, I watched you go through the 7 stages of denial.
I was upset, man.
Yeah.
And even when I was watching it back this time, I was feeling it again. I was just like, no, I just can't even, because like I did go through the acceptance and everything of that, because I remember like a couple days later, I was like telling myself, okay, maybe this was the right move. Maybe Brock Lesnar Brock Lesnar was probably the right guy to end the streak. But man, now I'm looking at it again and I just get so mad about it still. Like, I just like, I was watching it today and I'm just like, this hurts my stomach to watch. Yeah. I don't even want to see this, man. And like, just the reaction, like the crowd's chanting BS and I feel the same way as them. And I'm just like, ugh, I never want to watch this match ever again. Ever. It's, ugh. Not fun at all. There's nothing redeemable about this.
Hey, CM Punk though, right? That was a good way to end the streak.
CM Punk won. It was a great match.
So, you know, well, there's the thing, and I'm going to make the argument. The streak needed to end.
Okay. Probably, I guess.
You know, well, I think it's man.
I'm like
it allows the Undertaker, the fact that the streak ended, it allows the Undertaker to transcend the streak.
Okay.
You know, and not that he hadn't before that, you know, not that anybody was ever sitting around going, the Undertaker, he's just the WrestleMania streak, you know, like nothing like that.
I want to meet that guy so bad.
Yeah.
I want to have a long conversation with that fella.
But there is. You know, there is something for The Undertaker to, you know, a value in being able to let The Undertaker lose.
Yeah.
And continue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it was important for the streak to end. WrestleMania 30 was a fine place to do it.
Yeah.
The moment the streak ended transcended the bad match.
You're right. That's all everybody remembers is the actual end.
Yep. Except us when we have to go back and watch it.
Yes.
And it's such a moment, you know, like I'm watching it back, and I don't have near the emotional attachment to it that you do.
The amount of disbelief in the audience's face is kind of amazing. Yep.
Yes. The way they let it hang there. Yeah.
They don't play Brock's music.
It was so.
You gotta remember, 60,000 people had just woken back up to that.
Right. You're not wrong. Yeah. You know. It was silent for a long time. It was such a flat. I've never felt anything feel so flat in wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, like it was not a big. You know, a lot of times you see where they come up and it's the final spot and they hit the ring and the ring bounces and they scramble into the cover, and this was just, you know, it was just.
Yeah. Well, Taker went to try to go for the. Tombstone, and he got wiggled out, and then Brock tried to pick Taker up and almost dropped him.
Yeah,
like, it took him a while to get him into position, which felt super awkward.
He was also
too.
Still holding him wrong when he hit that F5.
I think he just had to go.
Yeah, he didn't have him positioned right, so it was awkward.
Yeah.
The whole thing was weird. Yeah.
But
I don't know that the streak had to end. I'm fine with it ending.
Right.
I don't think anything you said is wrong. I think you could have found merit in it never ending also. You know what I mean? Like, you could have given the same speech with different points had it never ended to defend that decision.
Oh,
I don't
think
there was a wrong way to go there necessarily. I think 30 was a great place to do it. I don't think my problem with Brock Lesnar always, besides the point that I never really liked Brock Lesnar, especially then, hated him more than ever probably.
Right.
But my biggest problem with that is, other than listening to Heyman brag about it before and after was pretty amazing. But for Lesnar himself, he didn't really do it. Like, he was already that guy.
Right.
And afterwards, he was still that guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, that could have been something that really made somebody or elevated somebody or at least promoted in some way something new out of somebody. Whereas with Lesnar, it was just like, it was, you know, well, I mean, it's an obvious choice, and nobody gains anything, and then we move on.
Yeah. That comes back to that argument. So what you're talking about is very old school wrestling and very idealistic wrestling.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, the WWE doesn't operate that way.
No.
And it's the, you know, the... You hear him say all the time, the title doesn't make the guy makes the title. And this is that same thing, you know, the Undertaker, winning the Undertaker streak, you know, what if they give that to an unproven commodity, you know, and then he talks about it for 6 months and then he's gone.
Yeah.
You know, with Paul Heyman and Taker, or with Paul Heyman and Lesnar taking it, They talk about it to this day. You know, when Paul Heyman cuts promos on Seth Rollins for WrestleMania next week, he talks about, he calls Brock Lesnar the one in 21 and one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
We got a whole bunch of great Paul Heyman out of it.
Yeah,
right.
So. Yeah, I mean, and that was one of my first points.
Yes, like, yeah.
Like the Heyman thing was a bonus.
Yeah,
and I agree that I'm not saying that should have been somebody, you know, straight out of Tough Enough or anything like that necessarily either. Yeah. But I never liked. I mean, there was the possibility of H doing it. I never liked H doing it because it would have just felt like H decided he wanted that.
Yes,
you know,
right.
Yes. I mean, like, but like a Punk. I mean, you know, I was okay with that because that is an established guy. That's a guy I can believe pulling it out. It isn't going to make or break his career either.
Right.
But at least it's going to add something to that lineage.
Yeah. But
whereas with Lesnar, I really feel like Lesnar was the exact same guy before and after.
True, but Lesnar's still there being that guy.
That's true.
Punk's gone.
Yeah.
Had they given it to Edge? Edge, you know, a guy like Edge who worked until he couldn't.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Yeah.
And he was gone before the Undertaker. You know, like, but like on none same of these guys note, have outlived the Undertaker.
Yes, but in 2014, there's no way you could have predicted that Lesnar would still be there either. You didn't know that going in, you know? And they've talked about him not renewing his contract a couple of times since then too, and he just always has.
True.
But any guy at any night can get hurt.
I bet he does.
Any guy, true. You know, any guy at any night can decide they don't want to do it or they want to do something else or whatever else. I mean, it so happens Lesnar's still around and some of those other guys aren't. But I mean, hell, they could have given it to the Miz. He's still kicking strong, you know.
That was weird.
And he's a guy who could have ran with that to the moon.
Yeah,
and would still be running with it also to the moon. You know.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, man, I
don't think there's a right answer to this.
Dan, we're not trying to find the right answer.
I know. I'm just saying, like,
we're discussing opposing.
Yeah.
Because I don't agree, and I don't need you to agree. I'm just, you know,
forgive him, Jeremy. He's still heartbroken. You got
it. Sorry, Danny.
Man.
Would you be happier if it was the Miz?
No. I don't think I would.
Really?
And I like The Miz. Now, so much it took me a long time to get on board with The Miz. I don't know why. But
it took everybody a long time to get on board with him.
Like, the stuff he's been doing recently.
I feel like
awesome.
I got on him quicker than a lot of people.
You did.
But that was still 6 or 7 years in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love The Miz.
So I made you rewatch this. Yeah, that's why we made you rewatch this.
Yeah.
I think this is a great, if you're a wrestling fan, for all the wrestling fans out there, I think the Undertaker streak is a very unique experience. And that's part of what makes it the streak. You know, now if you go back and watch it, you get to watch the WWE evolve.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You get to watch a character evolve.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's really not anybody else who you can go back and watch all their matches and see the kind of evolution that you get to see with The Undertaker.
No
because
doubt.
The Undertaker came, like, his, you know, when we started at WrestleMania 7 with Jimmy Snuka, he's this red-haired, big young kid, you know, and we get to see him. We get to see him age and develop. Mm-hmm. And The Undertaker is unique through wrestling in his ability to reinvent himself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from the Dead Man to the Deader Man to the Ministry of Darkness to the American Badass to Booger Red. You know what I mean?
He made going back seem like something new.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And then, he went back to the Dead Man, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then even the Dead Man was different.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
He recreated the Dead Man again.
And, I mean, we got to see, what, four distinct eras? Five distinct eras of WWE?
That's been my favorite part about this. I mean, watching all of these matches back to back in this short time span and just watching all of that, it's pretty mind-blowing, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because we always remember this stuff and think about the things as they happened, and we have like this kind of vague timeline in our heads about certain things and certain eras, and the Attitude Era is always something everybody talks about all the time. But like going back and watching this bulk like this, mm-hmm. just back to back, and seeing the way the business changed and evolved throughout these years, and Taker himself, like you said,
yep.
it's kind of an amazing thing. And like you said, there's not a lot of other people you could watch with a set
right.
chunk of matches like yeah. that and yep. see that sort of evolution and change. Mm-hmm. It's really unique.
Yeah. And even the guys who may have had as long a run like yeah. that, they didn't grow and change the way Taker did, you know? Yeah. And that's why he's the Undertaker and not, you know, yeah. not Bret Hart or Stone Cold or whoever right. else. You know what I mean? No offense to those guys.
Yeah. No, but, I just, you know, that's different
why
things.
Yeah. That's yeah. why he's the Undertaker, is because he had that unique ability and that willingness. And yep. it's just it's great. I'm not even an Undertaker fan, but I love.
Yeah, you are.
Man, I really don't know that I am.
Yeah, you are. You're not like a Mark, but you're a fan. You can't love wrestling as much as you do and not be.
Well, I mean, to some degree, you know. To some degree, yeah, you know, and that's the thing, you know. I guess that's what I'm saying. You know, like yeah. I'm not necessarily an Undertaker fan. I have a huge amount of respect for Mark Calloway as a wrestler.
What's he got to do with this?
I like
mean Mark Callis.
But yeah, but this is it's a great way to experience wrestling and to be able to watch one performer progress through the years yeah. and adapt and change in ring, out of ring, you know, the different eras that he weathered.
Yeah. The different opponents you get snapshots of. The
different opponents, you
know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, that's a thing. A lot of the discussion was less about The Undertaker and more about, well, he wrestled this guy. This guy's awful.
Yeah.
Like, what was up with this guy? What were they thinking when they did that, you know? Why was he there? Hey, you guys remember when King Kong Bundy was good? That was way before this.
That was way before, yeah. Yeah. Man. Well, definitely good stuff. I'm glad we did this. This has been a real fun way to re-experience my all-time favorite wrestler and also get, you know, we're in WrestleMania season right now, so mm-hmm. this is a real fun way to kind of prepare for it and everything. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed this. Hopefully you've watched right along with us. But if not, and you've just been listening, we would definitely recommend you guys going and doing this. I mean, if you've got a Mania party coming up and you're looking for things to do leading up to the big show, put on some of these Undertaker matches back to back and give them a shot. And
not others, though.
No. Just Undertaker. It's all you're allowed to watch now. Just Undertaker matches. But really good stuff.
And this is our first series finale, guys.
It is. It's our first series finale.
You feel sad?
No, I actually had a lot of fun with this. I feel good. I feel accomplished.
All right, good.
I feel accomplished.
We made a thing. As a beginning and an end and a middle.
Cool.
Not necessarily in that order.
All right. Well, hey, guys, if you enjoyed this, don't forget we've got other podcasts that we do as well. We've got the Geek Easy podcast, which always touches on a lot of modern wrestling stuff, along with other geek culture stuff, movies and toys and all that good stuff. And we're also doing another series called Marvel Good Yay, where we're going back and rewatching all the Marvel Cinematic Universe films leading up to Avengers Endgame, which is so close. We're a month away. It's mm-hmm. crazy. So we got a lot more movies to talk about there. So definitely check those out and stay tuned, because we'll definitely be doing more wrestling in the future. I'm sure of it. There's no way we won't be.
Yeah. Jaren will make sure of it.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the Streak Easy.
Bong.
That's exactly what I was hoping for.
The Geek Easy podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of The Geek Easy Podcast.